Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside of the VSiN studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe alongside Mike Palm, the VP of Operations here at the Circa Resort and Casino, filling in for Michael Lombardi, who's on his way back to Jersey after hanging out with us here during Draft Week in Las Vegas. Mike, how are we doing this morning?
Good. I think good. I think it was a fun draft. Hopefully it was profitable for many of our listeners. Michael certainly was dead bang on with the quarterbacks. Said it 5 weeks ago there'd be six. I know he came to town guaranteeing that Nix was going to Denver. That was correct. I don't think he thought Ben Bax was going eighth.
Nope.
I was convinced the Raiders were going to take him right after the Broncos, actually. Yeah. And you know what was funny? I mean, we lost small, you know, mid five figures. There was only one bet that we got killed on, and it was tight into the Raiders.
Wow.
Mitchell
Pauly said 100-1.
Yeah. Somebody bet at 85-1. Pretty shocking. You know, I went back through all the results. I was really surprised because at the time I wasn't cognizant that was terrible for us. But So I made one bet. And I didn't do it till Thursday morning, but stations in Nevada, you can keep it up till the draft, but only if you do it by positions. You can't list any players. So they still had how many quarterbacks first round, how many wide receivers, defensive, offensive players. They still had like four props up, right? Yep. And it was like over 4.5 still. And it was 470. Then it was, I bet it at 525. And then like it closed at like $9.
I mean, you're sitting there, you see the first 12 pictures, like, hey, free money. a little discount here. Anniversary sale is what I always equate the NFL draft to for the bettors out there. But I mean, it was the NFL world is still buzzing. A couple days later, I'm still just like, what in the world was the Atlanta Falcons doing at 8 picking Michael Penix Jr.? And like, every conversation around this, we'll have to preface this with saying this has nothing to do with Michael Penix Jr., the player. It's all about the process of team building for the Atlanta Falcons. Of if you loved him so much, why did you go out and give $100 million guaranteed for Kirk Cousins for two seasons, who's coming off an Achilles injury at 35 years old? I mean, it seems questionable at best, in my opinion.
They never dreamed they could get Penix at 8, I guess.
Well, I didn't see any mock that Penix was going 4. You know, it's like,
you know, I'll tell you what was also surprising to me was 3 and 6, because I really thought the Patriots would make a move, and I thought they'd make a move with the Giants. But the Giants were content to draft Neighbors and move forward without a quarterback, I guess.
Yeah.
And build for the quarterback later. I thought New England would trade down, and I thought the Giants would take a quarterback. Those are the other two first round surprising things for me.
See, my thing with New England was, and I talked about it with Michael Lombardi on our GM Shuffle podcast, I said, isn't it getting a little cute? Because there was discussions about New England maybe moving down, but then trying to get back up to 4 and all that stuff. So I was like, that seems like you're getting a little cute. Like, if you like a guy, just take the guy at 3. And they ended up liking Drake May out of North Carolina, who all reports and all indications, and the Patriots have said it themselves, likely going to sit at least the first portion of the season. They think he's a little bit raw, needs to develop behind Jacoby Brissett. So Jacoby Brissett will be the week one starter likely for the New England Patriots, barring Drake May just setting the world on fire during training camp in the preseason. At that point, I think there'd probably be too much pressure from the fan base to have him on the bench. He might have to play earlier than expected, but all expectations are that Drake May will be sitting. Of course, Caleb Williams, he went number 1. Jaden Daniels goes number 2 to the Washington Commanders. Do any of these quarterbacks at least move the needle for you in year one? Because I think that's the interesting conversation, is like, okay, these teams got their guys, and going forward 2, 3, 4 years down the line, you would expect them to make an impact. But can they make an impact year one when you start looking at win totals and that sort of stuff?
I like Daniels. I thought he should have been second. But how's he going to perform behind that line, and is he ready now? That's a tough situation, I think. For him to walk into day one. Obviously, you would think Caleb could make a difference with the Bears because of the defense they have. They've given him weapons. I would think he's going to go week one, right? I mean, that's my assumption. Tough division, though. Really interesting division. Vikings get their quarterback. Bears get their quarterback. And they're able to get Odunze. I was interested talking to Michael on Thursday. He really thought Odunze was clearly a cut below Harrison and Neighbors. Of course, you know that from talking to him. But I thought that was a pretty strong opinion he had, because I didn't think there was that much of a gap. Anyhow, so you would think Caleb would have an immediate impact. I don't know how much May's going to play. I would assume they think McCarthy's ready to step in there in Minnesota. I mean, the kid that lost one game, it was a terrible game against TCU in the semifinal. But
Godfather had something to do with that.
He's got a lot of weapons if he steps in on day one. Yes. He's probably set up the best of anybody from an offensive standpoint with that Vikings team and with O'Connell as a play caller. He's in a good spot. I can't get there with Bo Nix. Maybe it works out. Michael said Peyton's had his eye on him for a long time. And so he thinks he can do something with him, and more power to him. But in terms of an immediate impact, I would say for a season win totals, I think Caleb's probably the only one that moves the needle a game and a half to me.
That win total is so high, 8.5 for a rookie quarterback. Expectations mean that you have to win 9 games to go over.
This was a team, remember, that was mired. I had under 7.5 and thought it was locked up, and they run the board. And if they beat the Packers, I lose the bet. I had to hedge a little bit on the Packers the last weekend. You're talking about the Lions, who were up 17 on the road in the NFC Championship game, who returns their core and their offensive coordinator comes back. You're talking about the Packers, who Love was the best quarterback in the league the last half of the year. Both those teams should have won in San Francisco in the playoffs, right?
100%. Both of them at 10.5 win totals.
Minnesota, I get it when you look at it. Minnesota's fourth. I know we said they're more like 3 and 3A to us. I guess, understand with the draft where the Bears make that distinction. But 8.5 is a really tough number. 7.5 I could get to.
Yep.
8.5 is really tough that they have to have a winning record to go over their win total.
I mean, it is interesting, though, like this Bears-Vikings, yep, I guess, chasm that we have here, because plus 265 for Chicago to win the division, 10-1 for Minnesota to win the division. And we had this conversation a month ago, maybe 2 months ago, about how is there really that much of a difference between these two teams? And yes, Caleb Williams, a Heisman Trophy winner, and he has been the presumptive number one overall pick for a couple of years now, but he's still a rookie quarterback, and we've still never seen him play in the NFL. We've never seen JJ McCarthy play in the NFL. This is all, I guess, perception of what we all think these quarterbacks will be that's kind of driving those numbers.
At the time we did it, Femi, it was like plus 350 and plus 450. And I was saying this should be reversed or the same.
Yeah.
But at that time, Cousins was still with the Vikings right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, they go down from 4.5-1 to 10-1 off Cousins leaving and getting McCarthy. I mean, that's a pretty steep drop as well.
Yeah.
And the Bears go up from 350 to plus 265. I mean, you knew they were going to get Caleb Williams. I don't think people knew they were going to get Odunze. I thought they were going to take a defensive player at 9, but Odunze was still there, so they grabbed him. Yeah, good receiving core now for him.
That Minnesota situation, though, I think is much better than the market's giving it credit for. And who knows? It could be Sam Darnold as the week one starter. I think we'll have a quarterback competition in the Twin Cities if Darnold ends up playing well. It's also the best situation Darnold's ever been in his pro career.
As much as they had the variance the year before with winning every close game, last year they lost every game at the end, right? They were in every game, were winnable games. They lose in overtime. I think they lost 4 games by 1 score. So the variance just flipped. They weren't as good as their record was 2 years ago, and they weren't as bad as their record was last year.
Yeah. We'll talk more NFL draft throughout the show. We'll get into some props for these rookies. Maybe a little offensive rookie of the year discussion. Ooh. Maybe. The markets are out there for those who want to dabble in the awards market stuff. But the NBA last night, the Lakers finally did it. They finally beat the Denver Nuggets, snapping an 11-game losing streak that dated back to last season. They beat the Nuggets 119-108 to go ahead and win outright as an underdog in this one. They were catching 3.5. We'll get a game 5 now. I don't know. This is probably just prolonging the inevitable, but at least from what we saw last night, the Lakers were in complete control of the game, and they were able to go ahead and actually finish the job.
They've led every game. I mean, this was like last year. 3 out of the 4 games, they were in it till the end.
Did you see the stat that they put up in the broadcast that the Lakers had led for like 120 minutes of the series, and the Nuggets have only led for like 30 minutes, and somehow they're down 0-3? Like, they've been competitive, even though they were down 0-3.
They've played well, actually, right? And yeah. This kind of behooves the point of people who said if the Lakers could have got anybody else but the Nuggets, they could have made it to the West Final.
That was my prevailing thought.
Other side of the bracket. I don't know that it's over. I mean, when you have a team that's in the lead in the halftime in every game, you have to give them a fighting chance. I have Denver obviously in that 4-team parlay, which, all of those teams are up 3-0 at one point. And I was saying, boy, if they all swept, how much money did I leave on the table? I didn't bet a 4-team sweep. or late 2.5 games in every series. Of course, the Islanders fight back, win in double overtime, and now the Lakers extend the series. I don't think the Pelicans are going to offer much resistance in game four. That's even more lopsided than I thought it would be, that series.
Well, after we saw game one, I thought, I was like, okay, OKC, young team, not used to the playoffs. Maybe this goes 6-7 games just because of the inexperience. But it's been the Thunder ever since that game one. That was, felt like New Orleans probably should have won the game, but they went ahead and blew it. OKC beats New Orleans 106-85 last night. And yeah, it's going to be probably OKC in four in this one, in my opinion. The Boston Celtics, they also got back on the right track, though, after missing a bunch of threes in game two. And they win 104-84 against the Miami Heat.
Yeah, that game opened 8.5, eight and a half yesterday. And then I was 10.5 the last I saw right before tip off. Probably that number was too short. And the Heat hit all the threes in game two and won that. So, I mean, you couldn't expect they're going to shoot 53% from three again. I think it's interesting, Femi, tomorrow night in game four, this line comes back Nuggets 7.5 again, which it was in game two, and they didn't cover as well. I thought it might be a little shorter than that, but I'll take a look at the Lakers. 7.5 is a lot of points in this series.
Maybe Lakers first half?
Maybe.
Because that's where they've been dominating. Lakers
been
first
half. Been ahead at half in all four games, haven't they?
Yeah, they've been ahead all four games in this series. And Lakers first half, I think that's kind of where I would look to this one. And then sort of reassess there, because closeout games, as they always say in the NBA, are the toughest ones. And the Denver Nuggets, they haven't quite done it yet. They got to go ahead and get this thing finished up with the Los Angeles Lakers. We'll recap some of the Stanley Cup playoffs and also get into more of the NFL rookie quarterback fits. Just getting started here on the Lombardi Line on the DraftKings Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
VSiN website is giving you all the greatest stuff. We have an NBA article up there from our buddy Zach Cohen, posted this year. Guide to betting the playoffs, previews, predictions. We got some game fours on deck for you later on this afternoon. So make sure you check that out, vsin.com today. And it is just an unbelievable revamped website. It's been revamped for about 6-7 months now, but every time I look at it, brings a smile to my face. This is the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe alongside Mike Palm here hanging out on this Sunday, April 28th. Coming up in the next segment, our buddy Tim Murray, host of VSiN Primetime, will join us. We'll give his reaction to the NFL draft, his recap. Tim was with myself and Michael Thursday night.
How was he reacting to the live draft? He was he dug his heels in on under 4.5. It turns out he was misquoted. He had under 4.5 Notre Dame quarterbacks in the first round and did cash that ticket.
We didn't see those guys go. He was dug in because I went on with him and JVT before we started our drafting VSiN. So I went on a VSiN Primetime. I told him, I was like, the one bet I feel good about is over 4.5 quarterbacks. And I know that it was like, it's a sensitive subject for you guys because you guys are on the under train on this. But I just felt that Penix was going to for sure go. And Knicks, I was like, is this Denver thing really like real? Apparently it really was, but I was a little bit more skeptical on that one. But Knicks, I figured he's going to go, Penix was going to go at some point in that first round. So I was like, there's going to be at least five, so might as well just bet the over 4.5. So I don't know. Sometimes, and we've seen in years past, so like in their defense, these quarterbacks get hyped up all throughout the process because they drive the clicks in the mock drafts, and then draft day comes and it's after the top 10, you see none of them go. But this year was different.
I asked Michael on Thursday during the pressing three, I said, could there be a Levis situation where all of a sudden he got his over under is 5.5 and he goes second round? And he said, no, it won't happen with any of these because none of that was coming from teams. That was all stuff coming from their camps. None of that talk was coming from teams. This stuff with this year with these quarterbacks is coming from teams.
Yeah, it's a difference. And it goes on to show you the information out there. It's like who it comes from is probably more important than what the information actually is. And because I thought McCarthy could be a Levis candidate. Which I guess that's a new term now, Levis, for draft falling. But because I went on a set on VSiN Primetime, I said Penix is going to go ahead of J.J. McCarthy. Like that was like my hot take. I was like, I think he goes ahead of McCarthy. Because I felt McCarthy might go into like the teens, maybe the 20s. But little did I know that Penix was going to go 8 and McCarthy was going to go 10. That's how it ended up working out. So the NFL draft rolling along. And we do have some interesting fits here for these quarterbacks because we talked about it a little bit in the last segment. Drake May is likely going to start on the bench this season. And I think for the fans of New England Patriots, they want to have a team that is built around him to where he's not thrown into the deep end of the waters to say, hey, go swim and try to save your life. Jerod Mayo, the head coach, he feels the same way. Here's what he had to say when he spoke with the media after they selected Drake May out of North Carolina.
I don't think many rookies are ready to just jump in and play. And look, at the end of the day, our philosophy is the best players will play. We're not sitting here saying that Drake is our starting quarterback. I think he understands that. He understands the things that he has to get better at. And, you know, with coaching and once again, the hard work and the coaches that we have, the support system from ownership, you know, I think he has a chance to go out there and really play at a high level. You can talk about potential all you want to until you reach it. It really doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment there on Drake May, who I'm intrigued by him as a prospect just because I think the upside is high. Now, the downside could be pretty low to where it's like maybe this thing doesn't work out. But at least what he showed a couple of years ago at North Carolina left me like really like intrigued about what this guy could be at the next level.
I think he has the bust written all over him.
That's you think
my,
so?
That's my opinion. If you're talking about ranking these six for bust,
he'd be at the top of your...
Nick's is probably at the top of my list, and he'd be second. I admit I probably haven't watched him play as much as you, and I don't watch as much ACC football, but when Notre Dame plays in it, that's when I watch. Like Tim, I watched him play against Notre Dame. I didn't see anything special about this kid. I thought he was average. And I don't know, like Trubisky and this, what's this pipeline that they think North Carolina quarterbacks who really don't excel to take their team to do anything in college?
No.
Not to a playoff, not to a top 10 ranking, anything.
Not to an ACC title game.
Nothing. But they're going to step in. And I know it doesn't always translate, right? It was the greatest one sometimes didn't win big in college. But I question him. I wouldn't have drafted him this high if I was New England. I actually think they're a team that's maybe 2 years away from wanting to get somebody good on their rookie contract. Maybe they can get a team by next year. Michael and I differ in our opinion on how close they were to being a playoff team last year. But really, I think the question you have to ask is, how close are you to being a Super Bowl team? Yeah. Right? I mean, with the standards, how close are you to be able to go to a conference championship game and win? And I thought they were way away from that. I know the quarterback play was bad, but I thought they were still way away from that. They lack explosiveness. They lack speed. I know the defense put up nice stats. They were also playing in a lot of meaningless games at the end against teams also that were out of it. And so these 10-7 scores in that, I don't know that you can draw that much out of it.
Yeah, and also that defense was being called by, I mean, the greatest defensive mind in the history of football, Bill Belichick. It's a little bit of a drop-off now what they're going to be doing defensively for the New England Patriots. It's the reason why their win total, I mean, what is it, like 4.5, I think it is? Like it's like, it is a ridiculously low number just because there's just not that much that's going to be expected from this team. Like, I don't know how you can expect them to ever be like contending. And oh, now I guess if Drake May pops and surprises all of us, then yeah, maybe that's how they end up being good. But he's not going to be starting week one by all indications of what Jerod Mayo just said.
I mean, they had that stretch early in the year when they, I mean, their outcome wasn't determined yet, where they were getting New Orleans beat them 37-0 at home. Dallas beat them like they had scored like 120-9 over 3 weeks. This was in when they were only like 2 and, you know, whatever. Yeah. The season wasn't over. This was like weeks 4, 5, and 6.
Yes, October.
Right. And they were not competitive at all. So they've got a lot of rebuilding to do.
You mentioned teams needing to get closer to winning a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
A team that I think made a big improvement this year at the position, the Atlanta Falcons, I don't think is close to winning a Super Bowl just because of the quarterback who they did take, and that's Kirk Cousins, when they went ahead and signed him in free agency. Like, Kirk Cousins is a really good regular season quarterback, but he's not going to really be the quarterback that gets you over the hump in the postseason, at least from what we've seen so far throughout his career, which the guy's 35 years old. It's a little bit late for him to kind of change his stripes at this point, but their win total is set at 9.5. They made the bold move of drafting Michael Penix Jr. at 8th overall, a guy that's not going to help them out in 2024 if all goes well with Cousins in this rehab. But general manager Terry Fontenot and the head coach Raheem Morris don't seem to be too concerned with the fact that their 8th overall pick really won't be helping them out in 2024.
At the end of the day, if you believe in a player at that position, because if we're all sitting here a few years from now, whenever it is, and this guy's playing pretty good for somebody, regardless of the situation, regardless of you sit back and look back then and we pass him up, you can't do that. If you believe in a quarterback, you have to take him. And if he sits for 4 or 5 years, That's a great problem to have because we're doing so well at that position. So it's just as simple as if you see a guy that you believe in at that position, you have to take him.
I really hope he was engaging in hyperbole when he said if he sits for 4 or 5 years. That is the length of the rookie contract. You would have to pick up his fifth year option sight unseen, which would just be an insane move from a team building standpoint. But hey, it'd be a good problem to have, according to Terry Fontenot.
Yeah, I know Michael was pretty adamant about this. I wonder how many of these owners aren't involved at all and are shocked by the pick when the GM announces it. Like, I mean, obviously, Arthur Blank. Arthur Blank, what are we doing here? Like, they didn't.
So what's the plan, guys?
I mean, I understand that the owner's not going to make the pick, and he's hired people to make the pick, but maybe with the first-round picks, they at least know before the pick is made or know what the game plan is.
Or at least when you're taking a quarterback, you would think that they would know, given the fact that you just signed one of the money for
Cousins.
And that's what Michael's point was, like, hey, you just gave $100 million of my money to this guy, and now you drafted his replacement. Like, what are we doing here? Like there's no, like, there's no cohesion with the free agency moves and the draft moves, and to me, it just feels like the Falcons are just kind of going as it comes, taking each day as it is, but I don't know. We've talked about this ad nauseum. I don't see this being a smart team building move. And that's Penix could become a top five quarterback in 5 years. And maybe a lot of people forget about how this whole thing went down. But my thing is that if you loved him so much, you should have just drafted him and never signed Kirk Cousins and maybe used that $100 million to help bolster the roster.
How do you think Penix feels?
if I was him, I'd be like, what the hell is this?
I'm a top 10 pick and maybe I get on the field in 4 years.
I mean, he's 24 years old. Like, by the time he gets onto the field, he could be 26, 27, maybe even 28 if it's 4 years. Yeah, it's not an ideal situation. But, hey, Michael Penix Jr., he'll be out there in OTAs and minicamp. Kirk Cousins likely won't be. Maybe that creates a weird dynamic for this team.
Wherever Cousins goes is a quarterback. I mean, it's RG3 and it's Cousins getting drafted. And, I mean, strange how things have kind of followed him around.
Kirk Cousins says he was stunned.
Everybody wants a backup plan. He was the backup plan. Now they have a backup plan for him.
He was stunned, as his agent told Pete Famel of ESPN. Hey, like, we didn't know this until we were literally on the clock and they called us. Kirk Cousins probably saying, oh, they're going to get me a receiver. Nope, we're actually drafting a quarterback, buddy. Good luck. Hope rehab goes well. All right, Tim Murray of VSiN Primetime will join us on the other side. This is the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Mike Palm hanging out here on this Sunday and joining us now to help us recap the NFL draft from this past weekend. It's our buddy Tim Murray, host of VSiN Primetime, which you can check out Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 Eastern time. Tim, of course, dabbles heavily into the NFL draft betting. He did the show with Michael Lombardi and myself here Thursday night, our NFL draft special of the GM Shuffle. Tim, good morning. Hope all is well. I want to start off with the quarterbacks here because I think this is the interesting conversation now that we spin it forward to what's actually going to happen this fall. Which quarterback, in your estimation, landed in the best situation?
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to say Caleb Williams, especially because they got Rome Odunze, and you think about the weapons that they now have at their disposal. Just to run through them real quickly, I'm intrigued by Jaden Daniels. You know, the skill set that he brings to Washington with Cliff Kingsbury's offense. I guess you could look at it one way that Washington guys didn't reach to get an offensive tackle. I know they were trying to get back into the first round and ultimately were unsuccessful. I believe Jordan Morgan out of Arizona was who they were interested in. Green Bay grabbed him. But, you know, Jaden Daniels headed to Washington with some, some weapons at his disposal. I think, you know, it's easy to say those will be the two most impactful rookies this year. Drake May, long-term, you know, potentially guys, but I think Jacoby Brissett probably is going to get a good amount of snaps early on. And then we'll see about Bo Nix. I mean, jumping to Bo Nix with the Denver Broncos, fascinated to see how this plays out because, Michael was all over the top six quarterbacks would be gone rather quickly. Bo Nix goes to Denver. They don't trade back. And I'm fascinated by that one. I'll believe it when I see it. Very precise passer at his time at Oregon. Certainly early on in his career, guys, as we know, struggled mightily at Auburn. But, you know, maybe we shouldn't hold that against him. But I think from a success standpoint, I think Caleb and Jaden are set up to be in unique spots. And I think you go back to Caleb Williams, guys, when you think about, you know, what Chicago has done to help him out from a you know, skill standpoint around him with DJ Moore, with going out, getting Keenan in free agency and then getting Roma Dunze. So I think from an offensive production standpoint, man, he walks into a pretty intriguing situation there in Chicago.
Tim, I want to ask your opinion about the guy that Washington let go to Seattle, Sam Howell. Tough season behind a line that didn't give him a lot of help. Most sacks, most interceptions. What do you see as the future for Sam Howell in Seattle? Can he help that team?
Yeah, I think when you think about what he was able to garner in a trade, there was definitely interest from Seattle. I mean, he brought back more. Now, a lot of that has to do, Michael, Mike, with the fact that it was more of a you know, salary cap situation. But, you know, he got more than DJ than Justin Fields got to go to Pittsburgh. But yeah, I think you saw the flashes though from Sam Hell last year. So, you know, to go in there kind of no pressure situation where you're the backup to Geno Smith and at some point could potentially step in. You know, I think, yeah, I mean, why wouldn't you make that type of move? So I think that was a very, shrewd move by Seattle to go and get Sam Howell, a guy who started all of 2024. I think he's a guy that could potentially, or all of 2023, I should say. But yeah, I think Mike, he's a guy that could help them at some point. I mean, obviously it's still Geno's job, but with that salary situation, I think Sam Howell could be a guy that could, you know, in a pinch take over and play some good football.
We're hanging out with Tim Murray, host of VSiN Primetime. You can check it out Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 Eastern Time. Tim joining us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Tim, in the next segment, we're going to discuss the Offensive Rookie of the Year. Marcus DraftKings has them up there at a number of other domestic sports books. The favorite, of course, is Caleb Williams at 2-1. Marvin Harrison Jr., 6-1. Jaden Daniels, plus 650. J.J. McCarthy, 8-1. Then Malik Nabers, 12-1, and so on and so forth. Obviously, we have six quarterbacks in those first 12 picks. I think that's where a lot of eyeballs will gravitate towards. But is there a non-quarterback that you would think that you'd take a flyer on in the draft? Is it simply Marvin Harrison Jr. or maybe one of these other wide receivers that can make a big splash and win Offensive Rookie of the Year?
Yeah, I think your eyes gravitate towards Marvin Harrison Jr. immediately. But I would say for me, you know, Brock Bowers is interesting. The quarterback situation in Las Vegas, obviously not ideal, and they did not address that in the draft. So we'll see. But I mean, from a skill standpoint, if Brock Bowers had gone, you know, to another location, I think there would be a lot of interest for him to win Offensive Rookie of the Year, guys. So yeah, I think just him as, you know, obviously being a tight end, but I think more so with Michael Mayer being the tight end there, you'll see him in the slot a lot. I could see Brock Bowers obviously being targeted a bit. Now, you got to remember Davante Adams is still on the Las Vegas Raiders, so he's going to garner a lot of you know, interest and target share there. Xavier Worthy, I'm sure, will get a lot of discussion. I don't see him being a guy with enough, in my opinion, volume of targets this year. I'm sure he'll make some splash plays when he has Patrick Mahomes, you know, as his QB. So, yeah, I think for me, you know, Jaden Daniels, I think if you look around, I thought I saw some double digits on him. That could be interesting to take a flyer at 10-1 or so. Obviously, at plus 650, not as interested. But, yeah, I think of that list that we're showing right there, and I know you guys will dive into it, I think Brock Bowers kind of intrigues me as that flyer, just because we saw him at times in the best conference in all of college football just take over games there at Georgia. The one game that comes to mind, I think it was the Auburn game, guys, where they were down in the second half and ultimately Carson Beck just said, all right, I'm just going to get the ball to Brock Bowers every single play. So obviously Davante Adams being on that team, as I alluded to, in the quarterback situation doesn't make me feel great. But if we're taking long shots and having some fun with it here on April 28th, I would think Brock Bowers could be an interesting look.
Tim, I know many will probably wait till the schedule release before betting season win totals or divisions or conferences or to win the Super Bowl. I thought the Eagles took a big step forward to in terms of, they should be the favorite, but winning the NFC East and being the best, addressing their defensive backfield issues with what I thought were two great picks in the first and second round. Any team stand out to you as increasing their chances either for a win total or a division?
Yeah, I put down a couple teams here, Mike, and the Eagles were definitely one of them. I love when you have a concern and you address it not just with one thing, but you're like, we're just going to throw a bunch of pieces at it. And to go out and get Quinyon Mitchell, for whatever reason, he dropped the Toledo cornerback. You're able to go out and grab not only him, but, you know, grab Cooper DeJean from Iowa as well. So, you know, you now have multiple pieces to throw at a weakness, which is the secondary of that team. So I thought Philadelphia, to your point, Mike, was really, in my opinion, strong in the draft, where you look at, you know, what they were able to do, then, you know, add another weapon in Will Shipley, who can catch the ball out of the backfield. You know, Johnny Wilson, I'm curious why he dropped as far as he did, a long rangy receiver out of Florida State that I think a lot of people probably know the name. I thought Howie Roseman and company did a really nice job. You know, you look at, you know, Pittsburgh, another team that just, they needed help on the offensive line. Similar situation, went out and attacked it twice with two pieces, with Fatanu in the first round and then Zach Frazier in the second round. I really like Roman Wilson, the wide receiver out of Michigan. I think the problem that, you know, you get into is the AFC North is absolutely loaded. And, you know, the quarterback situation with Russell Wilson, we'll see how that ultimately plays out. But no, I tend to agree with you on how they addressed the, you know, issues that they had there. I think the Chargers are a team, too, that's probably gonna get a lot of love with Jim Harbaugh stepping in, the success guys that he obviously had at San Francisco prior, you know, taking that over. If you can continue to keep you know, Justin Herbert healthy, to trade up to get Ladd McConkey, who will, I think, be an impact player as a rookie as well. That could be, you know, production wise, he's not a home run hitter, but curious how Ladd McConkey will ultimately be. They get Junior Colson, a guy that he's very familiar with out of Michigan. So yeah, for me, I thought, you know, the Chargers with obviously the addition of Harbaugh, I thought their draft was beneficial, but Mike, I'm going to agree with you. I thought the Eagles did a phenomenal job of addressing their biggest need with arguably two of the best corners in the entire draft.
Yeah, the Philadelphia Eagles once again knocking out a draft. And yeah, they're at some point this offseason, I feel like they're going to eventually take over as a favorite to win the NFC East. There, as much as that pains me to say as a Dallas Cowboys fan. He is Tim Murray. Make sure you check him out Monday through Friday, VSiN primetime, 6 to 9 Eastern time right here on VSiN. Tim, thanks for joining us this morning and be well, man.
All right, guys. Have a great show.
Thanks, Tim.
Good stuff there from Tim Murray there. The point that he brought up about the Los Angeles Chargers, I think is really 8.5 is the win total. It was 9.5 with Brandon Staley. They still have I get the Keenan Allen's not there, Mike Williams. I don't care. You give me Jim Harbaugh, you give me Justin Herbert. They're going over 8.5. I'll put that down right now on April 28th.
Well, I think they might have won just 3 or 4 more games by competence.
I mean, honestly.
Game management. I mean,
and they're going to be a tougher team, a more physical team. Look out for the Chargers in 2024. We've been saying that for many, many years, but I think this year it actually comes to fruition. All right, let's talk some Offensive Rookie of the Year on the other side. It's the Lombardi Line.
Former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back. It is our number 2 of the Lombardi Line, presented by DraftKings, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe alongside Mike Palm, the VP of Operations here at the Circa Resort and Casino, filling in for our guy Michael Lombardi, making his way back to Ocean City as he was hanging out with us here in Las Vegas throughout the week for the NFL draft. We talked a lot of NFL draft in the first hour. We're going to kick off the second hour with a little bit of NBA. We got 4 playoff games here this afternoon heading into the evening. The first one in the city of brotherly love. You think our guy Michael Lombardi will be locked in on this one? His beloved
Sixers.
Does he
have tickets? Is he going to make it back in time?
Yeah, I don't know.
How early was that flight?
I don't know if he wants to pay his hard-earned money on the Sixers team right now. The way he talks about them, and maybe that's just kind of fans how we talk about our favorite teams, but the Sixers are 5-point favorites against the New York Knicks. The total's at 211. Philadelphia, I mean, in that gotta have it game on Thursday, Joel Embiid ends up dropping 50 points, which is a ridiculous number. The most points scored against the Knicks in the playoffs since Michael Jordan in 1996. Not to say that they're in that same category, but just it's a stat and it's a fact. How do you see this game playing out, though, today, where the total, the over is starting to get bet a little bit at most shops? Your DraftKings still 210.5 here, but I mean, for me, I think this would be Knicks or pass in this spot.
It was 5.5 down to 4.5 yesterday. I see it's back up to 5, but we were seeing some Knicks love. Yeah, is he going to score 50 again? Is he going to play the whole game? You kind of hold your breath with the Sixers. It's been an entertaining series, right? We've got a few entertaining series here, and this is certainly one of them. And you'd think the way this is set up now with Dame out too, I mean, the winner of this series,
oh my God,
going to march to the East Finals, right, and take a shot at the Celtics, you would think. So a lot on the line here for both franchises, a big opportunity. Knicks is just a nice supporting cast of players, right? They're kind of a team you root for. No big star. They just play together. Thibodeau's a really good coach. I mean, this is probably the best coaching matchup of the first round, Nurse against Thibodeau, I would think. So interesting here. I'm not laying 5 with the 76ers, to your point. And in fact, if it stays 5, I probably take a small shot with the Knicks this morning to have some action on an early game.
I think that's where I'm going to land on this as well, too. I'm like, because I've loved this series. I mean, the games at MSG have been unbelievable. We didn't get to watch Game 3 as much because it was the same time as the NBA draft, but we kind of had it on to the studio, and we're sort of peaking a little bit. And, I mean, Philadelphia always has an awesome atmosphere as well. But to me, this would be Knicks just because the Embiid uncertainty, like, he's questionable in this game. The guy's going to play. It's the playoffs. He's going to play. Now, how long will he play and can he finish the game is the big spot here. And that's the big question heading into this contest. And he's also dealing with Bell's palsy as well, like the eye issue. So it's like he's got a lot going on his plate. He was able to play through it in game 3. But I do think that the Knicks are the tougher team. They're the smarter team. And I don't think they're the better coaching, because I do have a lot of respect for Nick Nurse. I think it's pretty even, this coaching matchup. But the Knicks are just deeper, and you can rely on their guys more than you can rely on a Tobias Harris to step up. Or, I mean, Buddy Hield, I mean, he didn't even play in the game 3. He played like 4 minutes, 5 minutes, because the Sixers have realized he's giving us nothing. Let's just not play him. I think the Knicks is just a little bit more of a complete team. And if it's a close game, I'm more confident in New York in that spot than I am Philadelphia.
Would you take a shot at Knicks in 5 at 3-1?
I think that's a solid bet.
I
think that's a solid,
right?
Because if they win this game, then they go back home for game 5.
In other words, you're taking 3-1 in this game. If you're assuming that in game 5 they're going to be 4 or 5 point favorite and close it out, so I think it's a little interesting. Maybe you take the 5 and you splash a little bit on that 3-1 for Knicks in 5.
I don't hate it. Kind of like it. Maybe I'll do that after the show. Maybe that's something that we'll get in our pockets here.
You can do it during the show too, Femi. It's allowed.
during the break. Well, this is a segment I called me on my phone loading up the apps. Well, I think what's interesting, though, was what you said about the winner of this series and the spot that they're in. Because with this Dame Lillard injury, now who knows if Giannis is able to come back from Milwaukee, but the reporting on that, it feels like it's touch and go at best for that situation with Giannis dealing with the calf injury. If Indiana ends up winning this series, and then you get Pacers versus Knicks or Sixers versus Pacers, I think you would like the winner of this series against Indiana in that second round. And especially if it's the Knicks, we talked about this on President's Day when we were filling in for Follow the Money. And I said, the Knicks could make the NBA Finals. Now, that was back when Randall was healthy and Ananobi was cooking and stuff like that. Now, Randall, I almost think that they play a little bit better without Randall, to be honest. The ball moves a little bit more. I think the Knicks could give Boston a heck of a series, just given the fact that the Celtics in these close games are atrocious.
Yeah, they don't have to play any close games, and the ones they do, they lose.
They lose
two-thirds
them all.
Two-thirds of them. Not all, Femi. They didn't lose them all. What, they win 65 games?
64, and they were all blowouts.
You kept saying that. How could a team win 64 games and not get any honors?
It's happening. No finalists in any of the awards. Riddle me that. And here are the Chicago Bulls, 38 wins and 2 finalists.
How about that line? 9.5 today in the third game. Pacers, 9.5 with no Dame and probably no Giannis. And why did they play that game so early Friday?
I don't know.
That's strange. Was it a holiday in Indianapolis?
Indiana Day. That's a bad Nevada one. Day.
Casimir Pulaski Day in Chicago.
Indiana Day. Our producer Elliot, Indianapolis native, says every day is Indiana Day.
No, oh, yeah. Back home again.
The Hoosier State. But yeah, it was a little bit strange, but I mean, I thought it was a cool concept. You know, give us a little early action on the West Coast.
The Hoosier State is waiting for Caitlin. This is just like window, something to keep them busy until Caitlin takes the floor.
is Anthony Richardson, they got Caitlin, they got all the future stars. Is what they have out there for the Indiana Pacers. How about the Clippers and Mavericks? The Mavericks with a 2-1 series lead. They're laying 5.5. There's even a 6 out there in the market. Total 209.5 here. This to me feels like a 7-game series. I could see the Clippers winning this game and evening this thing back up, and then we'll play a best of three heading back to LA with two of those three being at the Crypto.com arena.
I had high hopes after game one, and I thought Lou did a great job running that defense at them. They held them to 8 points in the second quarter. And then, boy, it's been tough the next two games. This Dallas team, I mean, they're legitimate. And
they're good.
Kawhi holds this team hostage. You don't know if he's going to play an hour before game time. You still don't. I mean, come on. He did this to San Antonio for 5 years. He held them hostage. I just think it's a really tough spot. I don't really want to lay 6, but I think the Mavs are winning this series. What's the series price right now, Elliot? How big a favorite? Yeah,
minus 390.
Boy, that's tough.
That is a lot.
That's really tough.
I mean, if the Clippers win this game, they have home court advantage again. Like,
that is really tough.
If you like the Clippers in the points today, do you take 3-1 to win the series?
I don't think they can win 3 more games, but that's too steep on the series price. I was looking for 250 to lay it with the Mavericks. $394.
Kawhi doesn't look like himself. He looks a little bit slow. The shot is a little flat. I mean, he's obviously dealing with that knee injury, as he's always, every time around playoffs, is knee inflammation with Kawhi Leonard, which is unfortunate for the Clippers, who went all in getting him when they got him and Paul George about, 5 years ago, I think, up until this point, and they still haven't been able to have a full, healthy playoff run with those two guys.
I know you were at the wedding, so did you get to watch this game?
No, I did not watch the game.
Russ got thrown out of the game. He got ejected. But, I mean, it was not a punch. He pushed a guy in the chest after him and Luka kind of got into it, and the guy shoved him, and then of course they go to the review, and I said 20 minutes to decide whether he's going to get thrown out here, but he ended up getting thrown out. I mean, the game was already, it was, you know, like 4 minutes to go, the game was decided, but I thought it was kind of a bush league call there to throw him out.
Anything for you in the nightcap? T-Wolves at the Suns. I didn't see this being a potential sweep candidate here. Minnesota's laying
one. None of the game's close, really.
The T-Wolves have just, and Anthony Edwards, who's like, I was speaking with our guy Elliot before the show, Anthony Edwards is having a moment in this postseason. And it's like, he was already a star heading into the playoffs, but now he's reaching like that superstar household name status with the performances that he's put together so far through 3 games.
This team good enough to beat Denver in the next round?
I think they can push him to 6 or 7. Like, as somebody who has invested quite a bit in the Denver Nuggets to ultimately win the title, T-Wolves have me a little concerned because they're big enough. They're big enough to throw, like, they got Gobert, they have Towns. Now, Towns, I know, defensively.
They're a defensive team, and here they go with Phoenix. And the people think, oh, it's a bad matchup because Phoenix plays enough defense. Well, they don't. That's the answer, was they don't play enough defense.
Everybody said it was a bad matchup for the T-Wolves.
Because they beat them the 3 games they played.
But it's a regular season ball and postseason ball. It's a completely different sport. Like, I don't think you can kind of, like, extrapolate, oh, wow, they swept them in the regular season. Now, no. It's different, and we've seen what the T-Wolves are able to do. Right now, they're 5-1 to win the Western Conference. Nuggets are odds on at -110. I think that if we get the eventual Denver-Minnesota series, that could be maybe the best series of this postseason. I think it's going to be that good, just given the fact that they have the wings to throw at Jamal Murray, who is an awesome playoff performer. Now, I think Jokic will get his against Gobert or Naz Reid or Towns or whoever they throw on him, but if it's a close game, and that's usually where Denver thrives, you still got to be worried about Anthony Edwards in those situations because he is a really lethal scorer late in game. So I think it's going to be an unbelievable series when we eventually get it.
And if home court holds as it stands now, obviously Thunder up 3-0 and Mavericks have the advantage in this series. How big of a favorite will the Thunder be on the series price over the Mavericks? Not much, right?
Will they be the favorite?
No, Mavericks aren't going to be favored, are they? Give me Thunder if I can get him at a plus price.
I think you might.
Really?
I think you might. The market loves Dallas.
They do.
The market just loves Dallas. Like, I especially given the fact that, okay, it's their first series win. That's cute. Cool. Yeah. Like, here comes Luka. Like, I mean, the Mavericks get a lot of respect.
Tough to earn that one seed. I know you said regular season, but they earned that one seed.
They did.
I think they're very well coached. They have a legitimate.
They have the better coach in the series.
They have a legitimate MVP guy. You're right. You know what I mean? And they've just, they play very well. I don't know. I think you get value because they're being ignored, just like the Timberwolves were ignored, right? No, yeah, the Timberwolves beating Phoenix.
Bad matchup.
They play just enough defense to give Minnesota trouble.
I haven't seen
that. Where
do
you
go defense
from now if you're Phoenix?
Blow that thing up. It's over.
Golden State over. Phoenix over.
The Lakers probably over. What happened to our stars of the past? We got new stars now in the NBA. We're finally going to talk some Stanley Cup playoffs on the other side. This is the Lombardi Line.